I'm Mark Bayshore. It's Current State. Remember Pi Day about 3 months back? It was in the middle of March, to be exact, on 3/14, right? Many of us know that the classic math term that determines the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter starts off like this, 3.14159. Pi is a seemingly endless number. So far, it's been expanded to more than 13 trillion digits. That number was determined by a supercomputer. Tomorrow, Michigan State University cuts the ribbon on its own supercomputer. Current State's Kevin Lavery joins me now to explain. Are we celebrating with a piece of pie, Kevin?
Oh, I sure hope so. I'm there if they do, but I just don't know. The new $3 million supercomputer is part of a cluster, Mark, that's run by MSU's High Performance Computing Center. Supercomputers can process an enormous amount of data quite quickly. I spoke with Andy Keene, who's an information technologist at MSU, and I asked him to tell me how a supercomputer differs from the devices that so many of us use every day.
So the main difference between a supercomputer and a regular computer is scale. When you say supercomputer, what you're really talking about is a machine that has been put together to solve scientific problems. Usually it involves a lot of computational power and a fast network to connect them, and ways to for users to use that to solve scientific problems.
What is one basic example of a scientific computation that would just exhaust mortal human beings that a supercomputer can easily handle?
One example of a problem that people will try to solve with supercomputing is protein folding. If you have a molecule like, say, HIV, and you want to understand how the HIV molecule works, you can use supercomputing to build a very, very precise model of it to how to effectively target drugs at that molecule. We have another great example is weather modeling and climate forecasting. We have researchers who do large-scale modeling of climate change on the various continents to understand how crop yields are going to change and shift as things become drier and hotter. We have exciting work at the Facility for Rare Isotope Beams to understand how the beam actually works, or and to understand what's actually going on at a subatomic level. They can use software codes to do that. We have people in engineering solving problems around engine combustion or how to design more efficient airplanes or car vehicles.
Have we had supercomputers on the MSU campus before? Is this just the latest incarnation of that?
So MSU has a long history with research computing. MSU built one of the first supercomputers in the Midwest with Mystic in the 1960s. MSU has had modern supercomputers for the ICER has effectively been established since 2005. This is about our fifth generation system. We started out with a system that was about half of a teraflop, and now our latest system is between 500 and 1,000 teraflops.
What exactly is a flop?
A flop is a floating point operation per second, basically adding or subtracting or multiplying two numbers together. These are very useful for doing these kind of large-scale modeling simulations and being able to solve what ultimately are large math problems.
So going back to MSU's history of supercomputing 50-some years, has there been some sort of a aha moment? Has there been some sort of a concrete answer that has been arrived upon by a supercomputer that we can say, okay, here was the problem, and here's the conclusion we arrived at using a supercomputer?
There are innumerable examples of that. For example, the first cyclotron on campus was actually the modeling for that was done on one of the first, the Mystic system. We have a number of researchers who have used MSU supercomputers to solve larger and complex problems and really drive both scientific knowledge and applied knowledge, things that can potentially benefit people in their day-to-day lives.
In keeping with all things Spartan, the new MSU supercomputer has been dubbed Laconia. That's the region of Greece in which the ancient city of Sparta once lay. That's where we get the English word laconic. The Spartans of old were known for their manner of blunt and concise speech. When I asked modern-day Spartan Andy Keene about the supercomputer's price tag, he was a bit laconic himself.
More than your desktop.
But I still couldn't fully picture what Laconia was all about, so I propose that we stroll over to the engineering building to see the new device up close.
Absolutely. We'll give you an audio tour of our new Laconia system.
That's good, because right now I have a lot of zeros and ones in my head, mostly zeros.
We deal with zeros and ones, so that's a good thing.
Let's go look at it.
All right.
We entered the room where Laconia lives to find a series of tall black cabinets housing bundles of flashing green lights and thick electric cables. A battery of fans hummed in constant chorus to keep the hardware from overheating.
This is where you have to use your imagination. You have to remember that inside each of these glowing green lights and huge cables, there are problems of the universe being worked out.
It's difficult to imagine how much computational power is in each one of these small black cabinets.
Is there a project that's underway right now that is essentially cooking inside the oven?
Absolutely. We have this is a multi-tenant system, so we have a number of different users from biology and chemistry across our entire user space on these systems right now.
I understand one of the projects, Andy, is a model of how human beings are segregated throughout our planet. Do you know much about that?
I know a little bit about that. It's actually looking at some of the ways that populations change, and it's looking at historical data and records to understand how those changes happen and how those have changed over time.
And that's a fairly new field, I understand, called digital humanities.
Yep.
Right now, to me, it just sounds like an engine room. Where does the data actually come out? I mean, where does all this funnel into, ultimately?
So we have a large collection of disk storage systems. We have petabytes of disk, but ultimately that goes out over our campus network to the user community, and then they can use that from their desks at their labs.
And so we have to trust the professionals to understand that the data they've entered, when it spins round and round for however long it takes, is going to come out in a logical, understandable format.
Absolutely. I mean, that's actually a big problem, is being able to understand, making sure that you have your problem scopes defined clearly, and being able to having the tools to understand what these models and simulations actually generate and be able to get actionable data out of that.
Can you foresee a project in the future, Andy, that no one here at MSU has even thought of yet, that this could come into play?
Absolutely. This is a very useful general purpose system that will let us solve all kinds of new and emerging science. I mean, if you were to talk to me a decade ago, I wouldn't be able to tell you half the things that we're doing now, and if you talk to me a decade from now, I'll have all kinds of new users solving all kinds of larger and more exciting problems.
Okay, computer guy, we all know that in the industry, the turnover rate for hardware and software is something like 18 months. I mean, in the digital age, things are replaced so quickly. Any predictions as to how long this brand new thing we're cutting a ribbon on this week, on how long it'll be until it's in a museum?
Well, we anticipate 4 years. 4 years is our planned life cycle for these systems, but we stretch out our systems a little bit longer, but we get a lot of use out of them.
So from the factory floor to obsolescence in 4 years?
Yes.
Wow.
The candle that burns twice as bright burns half as long, so we push these systems very, very hard, and the industry is really aggressive about pushing out new systems that will be even more capable and feature-rich for our users.
The science of supercomputing has come a long way since the early days, a time that even preceded microchips and motherboards. I couldn't help but think about the story of one of the first such machines, the UNIVAC. Back in 1952, UNIVAC predicted, correctly, that Dwight Eisenhower would win the presidency in a landslide over Adlai Stevenson. UNIVAC defied all the other carbon-based systems, that would be us humans, who were convinced Stevenson was a shoo-in. Which brings us to this election year. Is Laconia up to the task? I had to ask Andy Keene.
Who's it going to be, Hillary or Donald?
I think this election has proved that all forecasting is bunk. I think that even with as many resources as we have, it'll be difficult to put a name on that. A lot of people have tried this year. A lot of people have gotten it wrong.
Oh, well, I guess we'll have to wait till November. For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.